Thanks for tuning in to this message from the Los Altos Grace Brethren Church. We hope this will be an encouragement to you. You can find out more messages and more about our church at www.lagbc.org.
So the challenge is on me to keep you interested, right? So it's not on you, although you've been conditioned in short segments. But I'm going to talk a little bit about a trip I took just a few weeks ago to Chad. So that's my visa and form that I had to fill out, and that's an authentic kind of wall hanging of the nation of Chad. So just so you can get a handle, people are like, oh yeah, you went to Africa. This is the true size of Africa. It is a big, big place. Can you see that? So that right there is the United States. That is the whole of China. That's India, Eastern Europe, the UK, you know, Africa is a big place. So I didn't see all of it. Okay. So I was in a country called, but this was done a few years ago by some people. When you look at maps, right, maps are, you know, stilted, right? Some of them were made for, you know, people who were on ships. So they wanted straight lines. And so some parts look bigger than others and the perspective isn't the same. And so a USA map tends to, in America, be right in the center, right? Because we're the center of the universe, or we think so. So anyway, this is just a comparison to say, guess what? Africa is really, really big. So the part I was in Chad. And a few weeks ago, we heard from this guy right here, Dave Giles, who talked about this story, if you remember this, of Samuel Dadje, who's this guy, Dadje Samuel, and about four stalks of guinea corn that he was given at the beginning of this church in the Chad. And so, amazing story. And the guy here on this side, Frank Poole, he's from Germany, and I got the chance to tour Chad with him. Frank lived for 15 years in Chad and was very, very influential in helping Dadje kind of think through things apostolically, thinking through things so that he could not just be a good Christian, but could start churches that would start churches, that would make disciples, that would start churches. And so really, really important guy. Kind of like, if you think in Bible terms, you know, Paul gets all the press. But who was the guy that went and got him? A guy by the name of Barnabas. I think of Frank as Barnabas to Dadje. And Dadje is no longer with us. He got an early advance to heaven. And so he's there now. But I did get to meet his bride, Christine, and some of her family, and they are doing well and continuing to make disciples in Chad. And so anyway, I won't retell the story, but just wanted you to know about that. But part of the story from a couple weeks ago you heard was those four stalks of guinea corn were to take the gospel to some other nations from this spot right here in the middle of Chad, down there in the bottom. That's a city called Mundu, and they were looking at taking the gospel to the east. And then they were going to take it to those four nations. So I'm going to tell you a little bit more about that as we go on. But I did want to show you this video. This was done in December, so just a couple months ago, as kind of a capture of what's going on in the nation of Chad by our mission, Encompass World Partners. So let me just click play on this. And this will give you a pretty good synopsis, and then I'll tell you some more about my story. And hopefully Andy will get us some sound. Yeah? Nada. I'm going to check one more plug. Let me keep it playing so I know. Technology's great when it works. It worked earlier. It did. I swear. It may work right now when it goes loud. You want to watch it?
The oldest fossils in the world and the Sayo civilization. Its right. Population is over 11 million. And since 2000,
let me just rewind it one little touch. Oil. There we go.
That is known for Lake Chad, the discovery of some of the oldest fossils in the world, and the Seo civilization. Its population is over 11 million, and since 2000, its major export is oil. This is a window into the country of Chad. This country is made up of an estimated 150 different people groups. The north of the country is Arab Muslim, and the south is African Christian. The official languages are French and Arabic. There are over 120 different local languages. The literacy rate of the people over the age of 15 is 45.6% for men and 25.4% for women. 53% of the population is Muslim, 20% are Catholic, 14% are Protestant, and the rest are atheists or animists. Chad is 496,000 square miles, approximately three times the size of California. The northern region has mountains and the Sahara Desert, and southern Chad is a savanna. The greatest population can be found in the capital, N'Djamena, located just south of Lake Chad in the west. Chad was colonized by the French and gained independence in 1960. Since that time, it has known much civil war, genocide, and corruption. Life expectancy in Chad is 49 years, and over half the population in Chad is under the age of 17. Encompass has been working in Chad for over 60 years. There are approximately 250 churches and 50 points of light. The Chadian churches were planted as missionaries came from the Central African Republic and traveled north, so the highest density of Grace Brethren churches are located in the southwest. The Summer School of Evangelism was established by Dajay Samuel, a Chadian evangelist, and Frank Poole, the current African Regional Director, in 1999. Inspired by the teaching he received at the Chateau Saint-Alban in France, Dajay Samuel wanted to build his own chateau on the property given to him. Men come for evangelistic and biblical training for 4 to 6 weeks, living together and applying what they have learned on the weekends. The National Church Association, in cooperation with Encompass, has established 3 Bible institutes in this country. These schools train men as pastors and also provide training for their wives. The Medical Works Department oversees 7 regional health centers and a surgical center. The association uses these centers to help and heal, practically and spiritually. There is a newly formed health awareness program teaching the population about hygiene, family planning, and health care. Medical teams are welcome and have encouraged the medical staff over the past 15 years. Mundu, the industrial capital of Chad, is where Encompass missionaries are based. It is a large city in the southwest of Chad. The Encompass staff have established residents with a home, office, guest house, training center, and dormitory. They help to coordinate the partnership between the mission and the Grace Brethren Association, as well as helping to host short-term teams. Also with the help of the National Ministry Partners to Chad, the team writes and teaches oral Bible storytelling to African youth and children's workers. The School of Missiological Studies was opened 2 years ago in this country and now has 10 students, pastors, professors, and evangelists. They attend 3 one-month sessions each year for 4 years. The school will graduate its first class in 2015. There are 7 Chadian missionaries currently working in the Darfur region of Chad and Sudan and in southern Sudan. In these regions, they are reaching previously unreached people groups. Please pray for true transformation in the established churches and newly formed points of light. Please pray for a strong, vibrant partnership between Encompass World Partners and the Association of Grace Brethren Churches in Chad. Finally, please pray for a new generation of leaders that seek to serve the Lord in Chad and its border countries. Thanks for watching this edition of Windows to the World and joining us in prayer for the nation of Chad.
So there you go. So quiz question. How is Chad compared to the size of California? 3 times. So it's a big place, isn't it? It's a big, big place. So when I flew over, I flew into the major international airport is N'Djamena, which is there. It's the capital city. And then I went down. That trip took about 7.5 hours in a Toyota Land Cruiser. And the roads at some points were smooth and at some points were not at all. When Frank Poole went there, there wasn't a road there. They actually had to fly from N'Djamena in a Mission Aviation Fellowship plane down to a runway down there in Mundu. And anyway, it's advancing, it's developing, but it is definitely the developing world, a third world country as we would know it. So a lot of poverty. They were talking about the strength of our churches. That's in the south and in the west there, and that's because you see here, this is a Central African Republic. We have about 2,000 churches in the Central African Republic. When France decided that this would be the border of Chad, a bunch of our churches ended up in Chad, and so that's just kind of how we have a bunch there. But I'll show you some of those here in just a minute. One of the Bible Institutes, that little red dot, is kind of where in Bissau, where the Bible Institute was. I wanted to show you this. This is our team of Encompass workers. So this is pretty cool because one of the things that Encompass believes in is in multicultural teams. And so you'll see that these folks are from all over. This is Kay and Kirk. Yes, they're married. They're not brother and sister. They are married, although they're not sitting together. They have been there for about 5.5 years and served in a really, really important role. And because of some health challenges, they will be coming off the field here within a couple of months and be doing kind of reconnaissance work, kind of going back in. They know important people and things in country, but because of a blood disorder that Kirk has, it didn't happen because of being in Chad, but because of that, he can't be serviced there, and so he has to come home. And so amazing couple from lately in Southern Maryland area and have been there working as kind of the Chad directors. Karina Corrales is from Argentina. She's from one of our Grace Brethren churches in Argentina, and they sent missionaries to Chad. Isn't that cool? We live in this world where not just the West is sending missionaries, but Argentinians are as well. And Beate is from Germany, and so she is there as well. And she and Karina are working on some stuff I'll show you in just a second. And Frank, you already met. This is what Karina and Beate are working on. Part of the challenge in a very low literacy society, what does literacy mean? Someone right up here. What does literacy mean? Yes. Words that you can read, right? In a very low literate society, producing books isn't that helpful, is it? If you're going to spread the gospel message. Now, do we want people to read? Yes. But we want them to eternally know Jesus first. And so if your French is any good, you can probably tell what that says. Anybody, any guesses? Yeah, 52 lessons chronologically through the Bible. So this is like if you will Sunday school curriculum for the Sunday school teachers so that they can tell 52 stories, a story for every week of the year about the story of the Bible, so that kids can learn it. So the stories are told straight from the scripture, but using hand motions and using different kind of props. So this is a facilitator's guide to help kids tell stories. Can you guys tell stories? Yeah, you guys tell stories all the time, right? What if you told Bible stories to your friends? What if when something came up about different things, you told Bible stories? Well, that's exactly what we're trying to do with the Chadian church and how they've asked us to come alongside them and say, certainly we want you to teach us how to read, but guess what? We need to know the gospel. We need to know the Bible, and then we'll learn to read as well. And so that's what Beate and Karina are working on. Pretty exciting stuff. The one of the Bible Institutes is in Bissau. Sorry, this is a back shot. I don't know why I never got a front shot of the Bible Institute, but, you know, anyway, maybe I won't say anything more. This is their library. So it's a pretty modest place. This is the housing for our Bible Institute students. So the Bible Institute there in Bissau, they have 9 families involved there now. So they come and they live there for 2 months out of the year, and then they go back home. But they needed some lodging, so this is their lodging. Doesn't look like a hotel, does it? So, but this is what they're used to. This is probably what it looks like back in the village where they're from. And so this is kind of where they live. This is actually a nice place for them. These are, I think, all nine of the men students. We're praying with them. Three are from Cameroon, which is a neighboring country. Remember, Dajay was going to take the gospel there. So three of the men are from there, and some other places also in Chad, and then one from Central Africa, I believe. So anyway, pretty exciting to be with those guys for a little while and hear some of their stories. This is at that Bible Institute area, the president of their Grace Brethren family. So they have 250 churches in their family of churches there in Chad. So they're as big as we are in the USA, okay? So they're not like some piddly-widdly, oh, that's nice. They're as big as us, okay? So let's, you know, so we're brothers. They're brethren, and we're brethren, and that's really, really cool. He would be their executive director or the president of their association, and this is part of his family. He has 8 kids of his own and 3 from a family member that he adopted because one of them passed on. And so this is his family. And we got to eat together. And so this is this is what they call boule. And so I have a little prop here. This is, so they make out of rice flour. They make essentially what we would make is rice. It's in flour form. You saw the ladies in that video like pounding on, you know, they were having that stick and they were pounding into a stone. They're grinding, making up rice flour or millet flour or whatever. Well, they cook up the rice and then they put it in these bowls or boules. And then what they do is they dump it over in the middle of the plate. And then you have like a chicken dish. I'm going to send one of these around on this side. And so you can check that out. You can see these are made out of gourds and then they kind of burn them. So some props. That's for you guys because I knew you kids were going to be in here. So you can wear that as a hat if you want, but make sure I get it back, okay? So anyway, sorry, that's the mess after we were done eating, but that's kind of, yeah. So chicken in a sauce, so you just take the rice and you kind of ball it up even in your hand, and then you dip it in the sauce, and then you eat it with your hands. So you can see his hands are dirty. So we do wash our hands before we eat and all that sort of stuff. This is one of our Grace Brethren churches in Mundu. You can see what... Can somebody read that? What does that say? EEFT. And what does that stand for? Église Evangélique des Frères au Tchad. So that would be our Grace Brethren family. De Frères is the old kind of brothers word. So it would be equivalent of our word for brethren. So this would be what our Grace Brethren family is called in the Tchad. So that's their street sign. It's a little different than ours. And this is their whole facility, okay? So this is a newer church, but this is a peek on the inside. This was a Thursday afternoon when I came by, and one of the things that we value here at Los Altos is if you have a facility, use it all the time. We use it almost every day, all day long with the school and all that sort of thing. Well, they thought the same thing. So they're actually having a Sunday school meeting. This is Karina, and she's beginning to tell them about how to use some of the oral Bible storytelling stuff in their time together. And so they're here having a meeting on Thursday afternoon with the Sunday school directors from about 5 or 6 different churches there in Mundu and in the surrounding areas. Later that afternoon, you heard that we do a lot of medical work. And so some of the medical work is done at what we call dispensaries, and those are like... you can't really see it, but above her head, it actually says pharmacy, and this says consultation, and then there's another room down on this side. So simple, simple setup, you know, just 3 or 4 rooms, but one is a pharmacy where they can get some medication. One is a consultation room where they can meet the nurse or the doctor. They don't very often have doctors in this location, but nurses often, and then one room where they can actually do treatment. So a lot of malaria, a lot of you know, difficulties, a lot of wounds and all that sort of stuff. And so they help with that. These are the Pastor Samuel and Pastor Fidel are the kind of coordinators of this medical dispensary. And so the exciting thing is for me is that these guys have figured out a way to help people and to generate income. So this actually... generates income to pay their support, what they need to live, and you know, pays, you know, the 3 staff people plus getting you know, all of that sort. So what's exciting to me is that they're figuring out ways that their church is to not only do ministry but to do it in a financial viable way, a sustainable way. And so that's really exciting. One of the things that we've been talking about with the elder team here at Los Altos is, are there ways that we can start businesses? Are there ways that we can do things that actually generate income so that we can support people? Certainly we do that through our school, right? That's a ministry and a support to many, many staff. But what are some other ways that we can do that? It was really, really encouraging to see that they're thinking, let's do a ministry, but let's have it generate income so that we can bless others as well. Some of their dispensaries are actually garnering enough income that they're setting aside funds to send more nurses to school. which is a very, very big need as well. So pretty exciting stuff. And this was a special gift that I got from Pastor Fidel and Pastor Samuel. Who can see what those are? Someone in the front? Chickens. Yeah, they're chickens. Are they dead? No, they're alive. They were wiggling in my hands, but they don't wiggle so much when they're upside down. But that was a gift of honor to me. So I carried it in the truck all the way home. And then, we didn't eat them. We actually gave them to some others to eat. We blessed someone else with that gift. So anyway, but a gift of honor. So one of the surgical centers that you heard about in the video, the primary one is in Gajibien. And this is the sign for that. And this is that area. This is actually the dispensary that's on site there. And then this is kind of a waiting room, if you are a sick bay, if you will. So people that are really sick, they can have a space there to be a part of. And then this is actually the surgical center. I did get a picture of the front of this one. Modest building, but amazing work gets done. This is the back. He has, you're going to meet Paul, who is the surgeon here. In just a minute, I'm going to tell you a pretty amazing story about him. But he has visions of a maternity wing back here going one way and then another surgical wing as well to get more work done. And I'll tell you why in just a minute. This is Paul, who's a surgeon in the middle, and then one of his assistants right there. This is their surgical room. Not the highest of tech, but very clean. I can vouch for that. We had to take our shoes off and put on special shoes and all that sort of stuff. It was interesting. We were in a major hospital in the capital city, and they have three lights, overhead lights, not like this, but three ones that you would look like when you go to the dentist or whatever. So one of those big lights, you know, people had donated them. None of them worked because it's 210 power, or they're trying to run it off of solar power or whatever. So they're like, thanks for the donations, but they don't work. When I showed the nurse this, she's like, we can do that. And I was like, wow, that's all you have to see to do surgery? But they're like, hey, this is amazing. So anyway, that's a side story, but I want to tell you a little bit about Paul and the work that they do. This is his staff. Sorry, it's a dark picture. You can't see them very well, but these guys are passionate. Right behind them, this area right here, are two consultation rooms. And before every surgery, every person that they meet, they ask them about their relationship with God. Every single person. They say, you know, hey, do you know about Jesus? Do you know what it's like to know him? Has anybody ever told you? If you have, are you living with him, you know? And you know, they are very aggressive. I mean, this is their ministry. This is how they do life, and this is how they do ministry, is by serving. And the key to their work is prayer, and this is us praying with Paul and some of his staff here. But I just want to show you that we saw this report. You may not be able to see that, so I highlighted some numbers. But they did... This is a report that he gave Franck, the surgeon Paul gave Franck while I was there. They did 415 surgeries last year in that surgical room. So they're doing multiple surgeries a day, and you're thinking, oh, man, this is crazy. Now, you got to understand, this surgical clinic is about 70 kilometers from anywhere else, any other surgical hospital, anything. So they are, like, positioned in the middle of nowhere. And so everyone from anywhere that has a broken leg, or, you know, gets sick, or is having a baby and having trouble, this is the place they go. And guess what happens every time they go there? They get prayed for. They get talked to about the Lord. It's a pretty awesome thing. And so you can see there, 315 of those were actually hernia and cesarean. So cesarean is actually helping mommy have the baby. So these people were coming, probably mom and baby was going to die. So there was about 92, I believe, if I remember right. So add another, 92 babies that were saved. Pretty exciting stuff that they're doing. Now, Paul is not a certified doctor. Paul's had some training. He's at least a nurse, I believe. But he is just doing this because he's like, these are God's hands, and we're about doing God's work. He's an amazing guy that's just passionate about Jesus and about helping other people know him. In fact, this year he was telling us a story. There was a gal that came in, and she had really bad abdominal pain, and they couldn't figure out what was going on. And so finally they're like, is it okay if we, like, cut you open to see what's going on? And she's like, yes, help. So they cut her, and her spleen is actually separated into four parts. And they're like, well, that's not right. I don't know how to do a spleenectomy, Paul says. And so he says, can we pray? Can we pray for you? That we'll figure out what the best thing to do is. And, the lady's like, yes. So they pray, and Paul's like, go get the book off the shelf. And so he brings the book in there. He walks through a spleenectomy, right there with the book and with God's hands and God's empowerment, and, pulls all four pieces out, sews her back up, and she's safe and doing well today. She's like, wow, your God is amazing. Paul's like, yes, he is. He uses these hands. He uses the love and the touch of these people in this place to administer and to minister for God. And so pretty amazing. So over this past year, they had 56 people of those 415 that came to receive Christ for the very first time. And 153 of them, were recommitment, said, man, yeah, you know what? I have something in my life that's not right with God, and I need to get it right. So if you look at that, that's 50%, 209 total people are having a spiritual move as well as a physical move when they're there. And so pretty exciting stuff. Can you be used? Can your hands be God's hands? Can your feet, can your typing be God's typing? Can your teaching be God's teaching? Yeah. This is, I showed you a few of the things. This is kind of the stereotypical Africa picture, so I had to get one. I do look really tall there, I will admit, because I'm not that tall in American life, but over there I'm a little bit taller, so that's pretty cool. That wasn't my typical sleeping quarters. We were in a guest house for the most part in Mundu, and so this is kind of four dorm rooms, and this is the entry to mine. This is for you kids, so you know I didn't have to live in a hut the whole time. So pretty amazing. So this was my room. And you always sleep with a mosquito net over you because malaria is everywhere in almost every mosquito. And so you don't want to get it. And thank the Lord, I haven't yet. So this is some of the wildlife that we saw driving along the road. So anybody recognize that? That's a camel, huh? That's a hump, yeah. And then he eventually moved off the road. So there was actually a whole herd of them that moved. And so anyway, they stopped us. So I wanted to tell you, this is a little bit about moving the gospel to the east. And I want to tell you about a guy that I met who lives right out in where that circle is. And they have about three or four churches out in that area. A sultan in Sudan has actually gifted land to this guy so he can live there. And so that he can do a school for the kids, and so that he can do a church. And so pretty amazing. This guy's name is Timothy, and he is this guy right here. Timothy is out there, and he's been planting churches out there for about 3 years now. He is kind of a second-generation disciple of Dadje. So Dadje discipled another guy by the name of Paul, not Paul the surgeon, but another Paul. And Paul, this is his Timothy, appropriate, right? And Timothy is out there on the edge in Islamic territory, talking with sultans and sowing the gospel. Now, what you got to know is when you go back this way, Islam came through this part of Chad about 25 or 30 years ago. And people are very, very disenfranchised with Islam that live there now because they don't see any progress forward. They hear about some of the other Christian villages, and they say, well, they have schools, and they have hospitals, but we don't have anything here. And so they're like, do you want to know about this Jesus who actually loves with hands and feet and loves with, education and loves with that? And guess what? They're finding fertile soil for the gospel. So what we would think of is, oh, Islam went through there. That's terrible. It's actually provided fertile soil for the gospel to be received. And so anyway, pretty exciting stuff. This guy is like a hero to me now. He's, there's certainly gunfire going on in that area. This is the area here that's called Darfur. You've heard about genocide going on there? Yeah, it's really happening. It's really happening. And he's ministering to people who are escaping from it. He's Yeah, pretty amazing stuff. And this is our Grace brother who's out on the front lines doing stuff. This guy on the edge, his name is Udube, and he's actually the treasurer, and he has a church. He's part of a church leader in Gemina, Chad. And so I'll show you the church where he is at as well. This is a little bit about Gemina. The main reason for my trip was there's a couple of big reasons, but one was to get to know what's going on in the nation of Chad, and so I've tried to give you a thumbnail of that. And then second, to scout the city of Gemina and say, what would Jesus want to do here in reaching this city? It's a city of 1 million people, and more people are getting in there every day because it is kind of the urban place. Now, out in the bush, I didn't wear jeans. Everyone dressed up, which was interesting. When you got there, it was much more urban, you know, much more youthy. There was a lot more jeans and a lot more suits and a lot more, you know, hipper stuff. People had iPods and that sort of stuff. It was interesting. Out in the bush, though, we were at that Sunday school meeting that I showed you in that humble church, and four of the people had their cell phone ring while we were there for, you know, 15 minutes. So these guys are utterly poor, so maybe just a handful of clothes in a closet, but they have a cell phone. You know, some of it, we're trying to, how do you piece all that together? I don't know how you piece all that together, but technology is happening. The world is shrinking, and, you know, anyway, back to Gemina. 1 million-plus people there. There's many mosques. There's a huge Islamic influence, although the Islamic government, that's not really an Islamic government, but there's a lot of favor given to Islam, and actually more favor than to Christians and those who are not Islamic. And so there's some intense tension about that in the government. And obviously, Gemina is the capital city, and so that plays itself out mostly there. But a major impact city. China is working hard to integrate. There's mineral deposits in the north of Chad and oil being found in the south. And so there's money to be made in Chad, and the world is running there. And it is an impactful place in the world still today. This is the church that Udube is a part of. This church is 40 years old, so this is in Dembe, which would be like the equivalent of Westminster here in L.A. area, you know. So it's a city that's close, but not quite right in the middle of Gemina. This is their benches. They label them. I thought that was cool. This is, you know, after 40 years, this is their old sanctuary. So this is, they put about 250 people in there this morning. So pretty amazing. They worship together, and this is their new facility. It's been in progress about 8 years now, but that is scaffolding. That's what that stuff across the bottom is when they're putting a ceiling in, and the wiring. Look at that, Pat Griffith. Where are you at? Right there. They're wiring up in there, so there's electricity. You can go check that out and see if they're doing it right. but anyway, they're waiting for the money. They're raising the money all on their own. We don't send them money, you know, to do that building stuff. That's, you know, so that's why it's taken about 8 years on this project, you know, and it's sitting there just waiting with the ceiling to be completed. So these were some of the folks that I was with back here. This is Mitch and Susan Sintek, and they're praying and moving forward with moving to Gemina, and they're probably going to be in about a 2-year training program till they get there. This is my friend Joe Caruso, who's from Akron and part of their pastor at their church, missions pastor as well. And so Mitch and Susan are a couple that are young and that are like, we just want to go serve. Where in the world can you send us? And we'll learn, because we just know that Jesus wants us to do that. So there are a couple, like, you know, couples I know in here, and, you know, people that I know in here that are just saying, I'm willing to go. And so they do want to take the gospel to the least reached. And so that would be Islam in Gemina, Chad. This is a guy, Rivers Camp. I mean, that's a pretty killer, cool name, Rivers Camp. But he's doing some nutso stuff where he's actually going to the north of Chad, which is, that's the Sahara Desert, okay? So he's going to the north, and he's had a relationship with this gentleman. His name's Muhammad. He's not Islamic, but that's his name. And he has this village of about 450 people that they don't know how to read, and Muhammad is worried that Islam will come in and take their village. And so Rivers is like, well, I'll help you, begin to teach your people, their write down their alphabet, you know, begin to put together books for them so that they can learn to read. They know what their language is. They can have it written down and all that sort of stuff. So Rivers, we're like, do you have any linguistic training? He's like, no, I'm just doing the best I can. He's a smart cat, but can God use you? Yeah, God can use you. You have gifts. Rivers is like, I don't know where this is all taking me. I didn't think I was going to be in book publishing. but he's using Amazon, printing books here, print on demand, and shipping them to the Chad so this village can learn to read. Pretty amazing stuff that he's doing. And he's gotten to talk to Muhammad a little bit about Jesus, but you know, who knows when he'll get to share the gospel. It's kind of like he does as a person working in that part of the world. Just being a missionary is okay in Chad, actually, but the Islamic people are very suspicious of you. And so if you do have a reason for being there, being a school teacher, being a person who's, you know, writing books, being someone who is, you know, a mechanic, being someone who is a nurse or in medical, whatever, those things are give you job credibility, give you a reason to be in Chad that isn't just, I'm here to tell you about Jesus, you know. That's good. We want that. But these guys have to have some kind of context in which they're serving. So Rivers is doing amazing stuff. We just met him at his house. That's actually at his house. We just met him and wanted to interact with him and learn what he's been learning. And so he might be part of the training for Mitch and Susan as they learn language and all that sort of stuff. Woo! So sorry for making you watch all my photos. So I want to give you some big takeaways that I had. This is the stuff that I brought home. Global Christianity is growing. Okay, in the West, we don't see that as much, but guess what? In other places in the world, people are coming to Jesus, being made, you know, as disciples and growing. And it's exciting to be part of this global movement of Jesus. What he said, I will build my church. And guess what? He's getting it done. It's pretty exciting to be part of. Our brethren in Chad should spur us on. You know, we've been working there since, 1960 or whatever. We see the same number of churches there. They have a school for evangelism. Maybe that's something that we need to introduce here in the U.S. is a school for evangelism. They have a school for missiology as they're thinking about how do we continue to send more missionaries to hard-to-reach places. They do that. They're doing the work. Now, is their church perfect? No. There's plenty of corruption there, you know, when you have people that are making very little and they're treasuring, you know, a good deal of money. You know, sometimes stuff happens, you know. Stuff happens in our churches as well. So no church is perfect. Jesus is in the process of making them a pure and spotless bride. And but we ought to be encouraged and spurred on by our brethren and brothers who are across the pond and working in a very difficult place. Pursuing business's mission, you know, as our elder team has talked about, what are things that we can do instead of just praying for people to find jobs? What can we do to create jobs? That's one of the things that's on our plate, and we're praying about that and trying to see what we can do. Pursuing business as mission, business as a discipleship mechanism is something that was really affirmed, you know, by looking especially at the dispensaries as they not only are generating, supporting the staff that they have, but are sending others to be trained and to multiply that. That was pretty challenging and exciting. Medical partnerships. If you're involved in medicine, you can be used in a short term, in a long term. You know, the front edge is, you know, Paul is doing 415 surgeries a year and he's not a doctor. Okay. So there's a place for you if God wants you to go and serve in a couple-week period or in a long-term. Medical partnerships would be really, really exciting, and the church there would be very excited about that. Let me go back here. One of the things that is part of where we're at with the Chadian church is that they have 250 churches. They have a leadership structure. They're organized, all that sort of stuff. So we're in the process of pulling out. You saw how many staff we have as far as Encompass goes, right? Five. And one of them lives in Germany, Frank. Two of them are coming off the field, so we're leaving two ladies there to do the finish of their work in chronological Bible teaching. Now, we're going to send folks to Gemina and look at doing Islamic outreach and church planning in that way, but they're at a spot where their church is maturing enough that they can ask us and say, how can we partner together on things? Okay? That's a different place than saying, oh, guess what? We got to babysit you. We have to be your papa. They're at a spot where we're saying, we release you. You're mature. Let's work together as brothers. You ask us, we'll ask you, how can we work together? How can we create partnerships? The impact of Islam. Every day, even in these villages somewhere out in the blue, the Islamic people will set up a mosque, and they'll have an imam that's probably part-time that comes there, and five times a day he flips on this crackly loudspeaker that does their call to prayer. There's an appearance of impact. And certainly one of the scriptures that we talked about in the devotions one morning was the passage where Peter is talking about the devil is prowling around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. And part of that is that a lion is intimidating, right? Right? He's intimidating. And that's part of what Evil One's strategy is, to be intimidating. If five times a day you're hearing this sound that says, guess what? It's a call to pray to Allah. We know who the true God is. There is an intimidation factor of, you know, of what's happening. And so we ought not buy into that. We ought not be scared of that, because we do know the God of all gods, the King of Kings. We sang to him just a moment ago. But Islam is impacting the landscape. And so anyway, just impactful. Urban work, you know, villages need reached and the cities need reached. It's interesting to see the tribal mentality in the city, but 50% of people are moving to the cities, and so we've got to get there. And mission isn't about civilization. This was kind of a funky thing. So I am in Chad in this very developing world. Talked with people who are doing crazy stuff for God, like Paul and like Timothy out on the edge. And it's like, these guys are authentic followers of Jesus. Now they have nothing. They have like three changes of clothes, and they, you know, are scraping together, you know, offerings of goats and chickens so that they can get on a bus and ride to the next training thing. So it's not a money thing. Their faith is deep and authentic, even though they don't have a lot. So I leave from Chad, a developing place, and I land in Paris, France. And right? That's my layover. So I get off and I see the Gucci bags and all of this stuff. And I go by the Rolex store, and there's a watch in the thing that says 53,000 euros. And, you know, I'm sitting there trying to, you know, how does this all go together? How does this go together? And then I remember that I have friends that have been church planting in Paris for about 10 years. They're trying to sow the gospel into Paris. Now, just because Paris is civilized doesn't mean that they're authentic followers of Jesus there yet. Now, they left behind a church, and they're going to Dijon, and they're going to disciple church planters from there so that they can go into Paris, because the city is hard work. But mission isn't about civilization. It's, you know, we want people to be healthy. We want people to be educated. We want people to read, all that sort of stuff. But that isn't just what the mission's about. The mission is about an authentic relationship with Jesus. And so it's not just about civilization. So just something that stuck out. And you're needed. You're needed. I don't know if you're inspired by Paul's story that these are God's hands. I am. You know, I don't know what I can offer to God. And maybe you're saying, gosh, I don't know what I can offer to God. I don't know that I could go live in Africa. I don't know that you should either. I don't know what that looks like for you. But you're needed in this global movement of Jesus building his church. You're needed across the street. And guess what? There are places, hard places in the world. People in Gemini today will wake up and not be able to know about Jesus there, because it's not easy to get to him in that city. It's a great city. It's a city that needs Jesus in so many ways. And there are places all over this planet where people still don't know about Jesus. And so you're needed. You're needed today. Let me pray for us. Jesus, thanks for letting me show kind of some stories and share some thoughts here about the trip that you had me take. Thanks for the prayers and the blessing of this body so that I could go and participate. I pray that this encourages us and spurs us on. Thank you, Jesus, that you do use our hands and our feet and our mouths and our stories to get your work done. Jesus, I don't know what you're prompting in each person's heart in here. I don't know what you're challenging them, but Lord, we just sang that forever we'll surrender. And so, Lord, if you're asking someone here to surrender something, whether it's hot showers or whether it's my medical degree or whether it's my, you know, comfort or it's my desire to pursue my stuff instead of God's stuff, if it's my comfort, God, I pray that you will help us to surrender to you and say, you're worthy to follow. And thank you, Jesus, for the encouragement that you're building your church. God, it doesn't look like our church, and that's even better because it's African. It's Chadian, and it's a beautiful thing. And you made...